The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Welcome back. It has been a very, very busy day talking about the Tennessee situation, but we do not want to lose sight of the critically important moment that we are celebrating today. It is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Every year on this program, going back more than 15 years, we have paused, regardless of the events of the day, to talk about it. And we will talk to a guest in just a few minutes about that day, what it means, and changes that continue to be desired. We also usually, I think, play a call that we received a number of years ago, the day after Martin Luther King Day. Some of you have heard it before, and I'll just get out of the way because the call came in and the rest speaks for itself.
I got a little tale of my own. Paul, I grew up in Alabama and was raised as a racist.
Were you?
And I was very proud of it. My father was in the KKK. All my uncles were. But in 1967, I joined the Marine Corps. I considered myself strong, brave, and stupid, so I wanted to go to Vietnam, and I got my wish. First day there, as big a redneck as I was, I met probably the most militant acting and talking black person that was ever on the face of the earth. Less than an hour after we met, we tried to kill each other. And we tried to kill each other for the next couple of weeks, about every day, till our gunny sergeant took us aside and said, next time that happens, you're going home on a bad conduct discharge. So we put aside our differences and turned out to be fair soldiers. We still had strong animosity, but over the next 20, after the next 2 years, he saved my life a couple of times. I saved his a couple of times. And we didn't, either one of us, want to leave Vietnam. We spent 22 of the 24 months, 67, 69, there. Too much we were being treated in the Philippines, but in 69 we both had to had to leave, and I moved back to Alabama and went to school. He moved back to Detroit and resumed his ways. After I got out of college, as dumb as I was, I managed to get an engineering degree. I talked to him a few times over those years. We had become, I guess you could call, friends. And he was not having it too good in Detroit. And I said, well, come on down here. Well, you can go to work for the same company I am. So he did. And he wound up working for me.
Wow.
And he decided he'd go to school and get his degree, which he did. And he decided he wanted to outdo me, which he always did. He went on and got his master's degree, and I wound up working for him. And 32 years ago, come April 3rd of this year, Paul, I will have been married to his sister for 32 years.
Wow.
We both had...
so now you're working for her.
Yeah. He was the best man at my wedding.
That's incredible. That's an incredible story.
We had two sons apiece. All four of them graduated from the University of Alabama. And
anybody ever tell you this would be a good book?
Yeah, probably would be. Nobody would believe it.
this would be a great book and movie.
But we've had a good life, and he lives about three houses down now, and we still try to lie as much as we can about our war exploits, but that just goes to prove, Paul, that anything can happen to a former racist. You never know.
That really is an incredible story. Just an extraordinary piece of history there.
Well, he turned out to be a lot better than I thought he was at first, and I hope I did too.
That call came in 12 years ago, 13 years ago, and I think I've had at least 10 different documentarians, movie producers, book agents call me asking me for his address. I to this day, I don't know who the man was. We tried to find him. We never could. Don't know whether he's still around. Hope he is. But he gave us a gift that continues to amaze all of us every year when we listen to that. Let's get back to the calls here, and we'll talk to Bill Roden here in a few minutes about this holiday as well. And Jim is in Texas. Hey, Jim, thanks. Good afternoon.
Hello, Paul?
Hey, good afternoon to you.
Hey, Jim Bird in New Orleans, Texas. Paul, I watched part of the interview, not all of it, but what I saw from the interview with the president, chancellor, and the athletic director, there are more problems than just the athletic director and the coach. I was completely unimpressed with the chancellor and the president. So it looks to me like somebody ought to start looking right at the top. I was just not impressed with either one of them. One of the worst press conferences I've ever seen.
Well, Jim, it seemed to me, as an observer just like you, that Coach Fulmer was on a different page than the chancellor and the president. Because when he was asked to comment about Jeremy Pruitt, he was still almost in the praiseworthy defensive mode, saying that Pruitt did a good job in recruiting. And I mean, here we are firing the coach because of recruiting. I mean, I know what he meant, but it came off a big disconnect. It really did. But I'm just an observer. I'm not a TV critic. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Richard is up next. He is also in Texas. Hey, Richard. Good afternoon to you.
Hey, Paul. How you doing? I had a question. A lot of people said that that they were, you know, throwing Pruitt under the bus so they could save the money for the buyout. For, you know, so they're firing for cause. They don't have to pay the buyout. But don't they stand a chance? Wouldn't they lose a lot more than that just in the penalties and the fees and the fines and stuff that they'd have to pay?
I'm glad you said that because, I mean, I've said the same thing. And as I said it the last time, I started thinking, so what if they have to pay him $12 million? That's a lot less than the damage this school is going to get if it's banned from a bowl game or two and receives a harsh sanction, which is at this point almost a guarantee.
Yes, sir. I also had a name, possible name that I was wondering. I always see these coaches, they get hired from people that, you know, they come over after school, gets, you know, a penalty, and they come on, and then they really don't get a fair deal. What do you think about Matt Luke getting a job there?
Well, I think Matt is a really good football coach, but I would be surprised if he was able to be elevated to the head coaching position. But he's done a really good job at Georgia. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. We are going to take a break here. We will talk to Bill Roden at the bottom of the hour. We will also go back to Knoxville at the top of the next hour and talk to Blake Topmeyer, who covers the University of Tennessee for the Knoxville News Sentinel. Again, some of you who are just getting on board, we appreciate your patronage today on Martin Luther King Day, the big story of this day. Other than that is, of course, Jeremy Pruitt getting fired by UT in Knoxville. We will be right back. We hope you'll stick around.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. Call Feinbaum now. 855-242-7285. That's 855-242-PAUL. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we welcome you back here on MLK Day, and it's always a pleasure to welcome this next guest. It's been too long, and we are about to check in with William C. Roden, the former New York Times writer. He is now with The Undefeated. He's also written a book entitled The $40 Million Slaves, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of Black Athletes. And the headline in The Undefeated piece that he wrote, college football is out of excuses for not hiring black coaches. And it's an extraordinary piece about where we are right now. Bill Roden joins us. And Bill, it's what a pleasure to talk to you again. I hope you're well, and great to have you on MLK Day.
Yeah, hey, Paul, how you doing, man? It's always a pleasure, man. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Well, thank you so much. We just briefly showed the headline of your piece, and I was somewhat surprised. I shouldn't have been. None of us should ever be surprised by these things. But I'm really interested in your approach to this article, and it's just somewhat amazing where this particular sport is right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, Paul, and of course, you know, you and I go back. I remember like it was yesterday, the first time we spoke, way back when Georgetown, I was in Birmingham. And I wrote the piece about how, I brought up the 14th Street, Baptist, 16th Street Baptist Church, the explosion that killed the girls. And I remember that was the first time we talked. And we had a spirited discussion about, why bring it up, why bring that up and whatever. And I think that, I think you probably agree now, I don't know, 20 years later or whatever that was, that this stuff that we're talking about, this really deep-seated racism, the structural racism, really has to be addressed. Those people who want to be on the right side of history, you, me, anybody. And I think after what we saw last week, the siege on the Capitol, I think everybody who really considers themselves somebody who loves this country and loves the freedom and the push toward equality, I think we have to, what's going on in big-time college football is just a microcosm of that really deep-seated racism. There's just some people, Paul, and you know who they are. There's some people, some ADs or presidents or the boosters behind the scenes who just are not, they just are not going to have a black head coach or a black AD. There's a core of people in our industry who believe that tenet. You know, this is a white man's country, and the blacks can play, but they can't be head coaches or ADs or that kind of stuff. So, and that's what sort of prompted me to write the piece, Paul, just because I would say enough is enough, but clearly enough is not enough. And maybe you know where the leverage is, but I just think it's this is it, it's people have got to step up, you know. So I don't know. That's not what you asked me. But
no. I do feel like I've evolved, and you know, it's better to have evolved than to remain the same. And because John Thompson took his team there, and I think what I resented, it wasn't that, it was just this characterization of Birmingham. It doesn't, no need to go back there. We're a long way Birmingham 20
right.
years ago. But I sit here and listen. I talked to Sylvester Crewe not long ago on this program, and I asked him about progress. And he said, there hasn't been any progress. Bill, I just wonder, though, and I'm really interested because you talk to a lot of people, know a lot of people, and understand this. Despite this bright spotlight that we have on, why do you think college football is different?
I think that, Paul, there's an image that remains in my mind from the siege on the Capitol. Of this guy, this white guy, standing in a rotunda with a Confederate flag in our nation's capital. And I just think that there are a lot of people, a lot of college programs, presidents, like the boosters, who are planting that same Confederate flag in big-time college football. You know, they could be the boosters and all that, and they want to go back. They want to preserve that status quo, even though you can't go back. You know, it's impossible to go back. But there are people, I think, you probably know some of them, who are planting that invisible Confederate flag in these programs and saying, you know, there could be really influential boosters or college town officials or whatever said, no, we are not going to have a black head coach at Alabama. We're not going to have a black coach or maybe in Tennessee. You know, you know, how do we get to the next level? I mean, really, the only leverage really lies, and I'm sort of looking at what Deshaun Watson is doing with Houston. I don't want to get off on a tangent, but until big-time college recruits and their families really step up and have some guts and say, we want to play in a program that has some black leadership, either as a black AD or a black head coach, and if it's not division, if it's not a Power Five, fine, we'll go there. You know, until enough young people and their families take a stand, it's kind of like what happened in Harlem and Chicago during the 1920s, 1930s. Don't shop where you can't work. Don't buy where you can't work. And they would boycott these places that said, wait a minute, you want us to spend our money, but we can't work there? You know, so I think the same principle has to take place in big time college football. The players, these highly recruited players, have to let it be known that we are not going to play in programs that are basically telling us they don't respect us for anything more than our muscle, and that there's no shot for me to be in a leadership position. Now, you and I both know that over the next 20 years, there's going to be change, you know? I mean, there's going to be change. It's happened in your lifetime and my lifetime, but the only reason there was change in your lifetime and my lifetime is that people put it on the line and people made sacrifices. So that's kind of where I am now. I just think that, you know, there is no progress without, confrontation. I'm messing up Frederick Douglass's quote. But, you know, there has to be I think the parents and the recruits and those high school coaches and all that, we get so caught up in, well, we got to go to Bama. You know, we got to go to, you know, not saying that Bama doesn't give a damn about you, not in terms of you ever being the athletic director or the head coach. They want you to run and jump. And I don't know. I mean, what do you think? I mean, the reason I asked you is because you've seen it, Paul. You know exactly the people
I watched it. And we talked about this once when I think we were together in New York at Columbia. I saw it firsthand as recently as 2000 and what year was it? 2003, I believe, when Alabama fired a coach who had not even coached a game, and it came down between Sylvester Croom and Mike Shula. And you know the history of Sylvester Croom. His father was the team chaplain for Paul Bryant, but they hired Mike Shula. Why? Because he had a famous coach and he looked better. And it was a disaster. Now Sylvester got a job, thankfully, at Mississippi State, thanks to a brave man named Larry Templeton, the athletic director. It didn't work out all that well, but he didn't beat Nick Saban his first year. But still, it changed. And Mike Slive, the former commissioner, in spite of all the success of the SEC, Bill, said that was his proudest moment as a Southeastern Conference commissioner.
Yeah. And now I think the SEC doesn't have a black coach.
No.
A head coach. You know, you mentioned John Thompson. And one of the things that John was saying, that there are a lot of problems. One of them is that not only do black coaches want an opportunity, but you have to have an equal opportunity to fail, and then to be rehired. You know, you mentioned Mike Shula, and you could probably go right down the list of white coaches who fail and then will reabsorb and recycle and return, and I think that's part of this equality, too, that you Sylvester Croom shouldn't have to wait, forever to get another job. So, again, we're talking about systemic racism, and it's probably never been, when I looked at that, the debacle, when it was a mob, taking over the Capitol, I wonder how many athletic people, like in the SEC, were there or would have liked to be there or were there in spirit. How many athletic folks? You had the kid. Who was the coach? Who was the coach? The Tennessee coach, not Tennessee, but one of the Tennessee schools who was fired
today
because he was tweeted out stuff about Stacey Abrams. Tennessee Chattanooga. Yeah. And what was disturbing about that, here's a guy, a coach at Tennessee Chattanooga, around a lot of black guys, and holding these type of racist views, and I hate to be, to generalize, but there are a lot of folks like that. Now, fortunately, there are a lot more decent people, but there are a lot of folks like that in our industry. We really have to, and I call on people like you, Paul, who are leaders in there. You got to call this stuff out. You got to call these people out, whether it's the boosters behind the scene or the president or those athletic directors or who have these types of racist feelings and are not going to give black administrators or potential head coaches a fair shot because they just, They don't believe that's what this country is about. They, like I said, they're planting this Confederate flag in the athletic industry, in the college sports athletic industry. And the only way to root that out, I was reading an AP story. And you know how we do. We write these stories and we said these are the hot candidates. That old game. These are the hot candidates. And it's the same people, recycling people. So there's a lot, but I do think that, when you look at on a day where we're celebrating, Dr. King, there was a Montgomery boycott when they brought the bus company to his knees by saying, "We're not going to patronize you. We'll walk." And I think that has to be the same thing in our industry. We'll walk with Deshaun Watson saying, "I don't want to play with this organization anymore. I don't have to play that." And so that's where I am right now.
Well, I know you have to go somewhere, but I hope you'll come back, Bill. It's a pleasure just to visit with you and to hear your thoughts, and especially on this day of all days. So thank you very, very much for your time.
Hey, Paul, thank you so much for the opportunity, man. It's always a pleasure and any time.
You got it. William Roden from the Undefeated, just an extraordinary conversation on MLK Day, and we will head to the break. We thank you for being a part of the program. Much more to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Blake Topmeyer at the top of the next hour on the latest from Rocky Top. Let's check in with Logan next. from North Carolina. Hello, Logan.
Hey, Paul, my friend. How are you doing today?
Logan, we're doing great.
It's a crazy day. I really do appreciate the interview with Mr. Roden. That was very enlightening, and I appreciate you having him on. One thing I wanted to ask you is I didn't realize that Philip Fulmer had hired Donald Trump's ex-speechwriter to write his speech today. That was pretty bad. It's pretty unbelievable. And from what I understand, watching the show and just hearing some things, is there some insinuation that Kevin Steele knew some boosters that blew the whistle to get this job from Pruitt?
No, none whatsoever. You got the wrong school. That was Auburn.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, yeah. I expected that much from them. So that's crazy, though. Yeah, it's really dirty politics. I mean, I don't know what's going on. I wish I knew a little more about what was happening. And, you know, I'm definitely not a Tennessee fan.
You know, Logan, remember all those Tennessee fans who were celebrating when they destroyed Greg Schiano's chances of getting this job on a bogus claim?
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Right, yeah.
Look what they got.
How did that work out? I mean, I think he's doing okay now.
He's done a pretty good job at Rutgers.
Yeah. So who's going to be the next coach, Paul? I need you to put your
I don't know, because
look at your crystal ball.
I think Kevin Steele is likely to until we see the AD, it will be difficult to offer. But you know, Steele has a chance to hang around for a little while, regardless of whether he's the head coach or not. I think he'll have a lot of influence. So I think you start there, and you know, I think there could be a total wipeout. I mean, would you want to be an assistant right now on a staff that's already seen 9 firings?
I mean, that's really scary. I don't know. And the thing about it is, I mean, I've never seen anyone react that quickly to any violations, and they haven't even proven it yet. I mean, technically, I guess, but they fired 9 people today. That looks really bad.
I mean, this isn't – This reeks of an inside job, and I don't mean that in the typical way. I mean, this sounds like there is someone inside the program that told all, because usually when you're battling the NCAA, it's he said, she said, and the NCAA is so incompetent, they have no idea how to pin it on you. And I mean, I've watched schools obfuscate, lie, cheat. The basic philosophy on fighting the NCAA is don't admit what day it is, and the Tennessee chancellor pretty well said, hey, we're guilty.
Yeah, it seems really dirty to me, Paul. I mean, I like I said, I don't have any love lost for Tennessee, but I kind of feel bad. I mean, Fulmer kind of was the fall guy. And Pruitt definitely got screwed over.
Well, comments today, not to be overly cynical, but I will be, where they talked about integrity. I hate to break it to anyone right now, but you don't use the phrase integrity until you get caught.
No, and I mean, I agree. And, I was hoping Pruitt one day might come back to the Alabama staff. But like you said before, if he's got that hanging over him, nobody's going to touch that guy. He has no job prospects.
Well, the thing about Pruitt, and I will say this in fairness to him, and I think he's been a terrible head coach. I had high hopes for him, and it wasn't even the one loss record. It was his demeanor I thought was quite frankly embarrassing. And, you know, I know people that went to him and offered to try to guide him through the rough edges, and he didn't care. He was a bull in the china shop. He thought he knew everything, and that's really, you know, obviously he didn't. But yeah, this program is in a lot of trouble, and I just can't get 2017 out of my head when you had a blogger lead a revolt, followed by many, many people, an insurrection basically against Greg Schiano on a bogus claim. And it led to the most embarrassing coaching search I've ever seen, which led to John Curry getting fired, which led to Philip Fulmer coming in and basically looking at the scraps to try to come up with a head coach. He had three choices. Mel Tucker turned out to be pretty good. Kevin Steele, I think, has done a good job, and he ended up choosing the worst of the three.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane. I don't know where they're going to go from here. I have no idea, Paul.
Yeah, I know fans love to be optimistic, but this is an incredibly dark day for a program that has only known dark days over the last 10 years. I don't know how you get out of this. But at least the university didn't let this go on for a year or two, as many schools do, with a prolonged investigation. They cut the cord fast. Let's check in with Harold, who is in Alabama. Hey, Harold, welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Hey, Paul, how you doing today?
We are well, thank you.
Listen, I really enjoy your show, and I live in Albertville, Alabama.
Thank you very much.
And, Jeremy Pruitt's dad was a head football coach here in Albertville before he retired, and they hadn't been to a state playoff in X number of years before he came here. And the year after he came, they went to three straight state playoffs. Well, in this press conference, what I noticed here is not what they said, it's what you had to listen to. And I didn't hear Philip Fulmer criticize or lay the blame on Jeremy Pruitt whatsoever, and he talked about the good things he'd done for the program. Now, the woman chancellor, I don't know if she was the same one that was there when the debacle happened.
No. She is new.
She is. But yeah. If she worked for me, I'd fire her because she should have never said, oh, we got Class 1 and Class 2 violations or whatever. You let the NCAA investigate it and find out what's going to be and let them define the penalties. But now you've got yourself in the situation where if you were a good head coach, there's no way you'd go to Tennessee.
Well,
right,
Harold,
no way.
I think there's a little bit of overreaction here, and you're right. I've covered a lot of NCAA cases, and you may remember the Alabama case. The Gene Stallings case was basically a speeding ticket that they ended up getting 3 years probation for, and they got the last year knocked out because of the nefarious and perfidious behavior of the NCAA. The second time around, 10 years later, they never admitted to anything, and the NCAA told them they came within a whisker of the death penalty, and it really doesn't matter. It does you no good in the parlance of the NCAA to admit to wrongdoing because they can't prove it. You hope for a deal.
That's right.
And Tennessee's hope for a deal is long gone. They're guilty.
Well, Paul, on a note, if you've got a minute, I have got a really good Gene Stallings story for you.
Sure.
And that story was 12 years ago, my son, he had his first second child, and it was a Down syndrome little boy, and he lives in Huntsville. And 3 days after that child was born, Coach Stallings called him on the phone and talked to him about little Johnny.
Oh, wow.
And sent him an autographed book that he had written about little Johnny. Well, you know, it really helped our family and everything. Well, in 1965, my dad and I had gone to the Georgia Tech Texas A&M game in Atlanta, and I had the program from that game, and I wrote Coach Stallings a letter and sent him that program. about a year after that, my wife and daughter were going to Alaska on a cruise, and she got on the plane in Huntsville, Alabama, and Coach Stallings was on the plane going to Dallas. And she talked to him, and he remembered everything about my grandson, and he told my wife that those kids were little angels sent here to look after us. Coach Stallings is a class act, and I've always had a special place in my heart for him. With that, Paul, I'll let you get going.
Harold, thank you.
Take care.
Thank you very much. I totally agree. He's an incredible man that has given many more gifts than almost anyone in that profession I've ever seen. We are heading to a break. Thanks for being with us. Blake Topmeyer at the top of the next hour. We'll get the latest from Knoxville on another eventful day on Rocky Top.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We welcome you back here on a late Monday afternoon, early evening. Al is in Chicago. Hey, Al.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Happy Martin Luther King Day.
Thank you very much.
Comment. Booger McFarland's interview the other day. I think Booger played a little too much football without his helmet on and saying that LSU last year was a better team than Alabama this year. I can give him the case where they play so many top 10 teams, but you got to remember some of LSU's numbers and Joe Burrow's numbers were inflated by the fact that they played Northwestern State, they played Georgia Southern, I think, and Utah State, and they beat those teams by like 170-20 or something like that. So I think Booger needs to reevaluate what he said.
Well,
second thing
yeah,
is,
yeah, go ahead.
My second comment is on Fulmer at Tennessee. You know, he was a great coach, and I think he got promoted to a level of incompetency. I don't ever think he was really a good AD at Tennessee. You look at the different hirings he had, the mess the school has been in since he got away from the coaching aspect. I think he was a great coach. I think he is the cancer of this situation. And as that chancellor said, she holds Jeremy Pruitt responsible for people that report directly and indirectly to him. So that's why he's fired. Okay, there's a double standard here. Why didn't she do the same thing before?
Well, let me answer that. I don't think you can blame Philip Fulmer for this. Yeah, he is in charge of that program, and he did hire Jeremy Pruitt. And I think ultimately, you know, he said something wise today, whether he was pushed or not. If you are going to clean the program up, it's better to blow it up and not leave any remnants. And I think the thing is so bad and so toxic that he could see that. I think he could see it. Let's move on and talk to Ace, who is in Georgia. Ace, good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, it's Ace Dog from Chatsworth, Georgia.
Wonderful. Great to hear from you.
Hey, man, I was just wondering, you think Napier, I put his name in the hat. He's from Chatsworth. I knew the family well, great family, and his father was a great high school coach who fought a long battle with Lou Gehrig's disease.
Man, I hate to hear that. You know, I think Billy Napier is a really good coach. I think right now, I'm not an agent, but if you're an agent representing anyone in this coaching search, you better get a long lockdown contract because Tennessee is not going to come out of this very easily. So I think it depends. The AD is the key. And we heard Chris Lowe mention John Gilbert, who spent time at Tennessee. He was the AD at Southern, East Carolina. Also spent a long time at Alabama. So he has a lot of experience. We'll take a break. We have Blake Topmeyer coming up here in just a few minutes. He covers the Vols for the Knoxville News Sentinel. We'll recap all of the news from Knoxville right after this.